I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. Together we're the functional nerds.
This is a very sensitive subject.
My name is Patrick Hester, his name is John Anilio, and you're listening to the Patreon-only episode of the Functional Nerds, and this is the fourth of these that we have recorded so far, John.
Yes, yes. You know, we're finding our feet with all of this stuff, and so if you are one of our Patreon backers, first off, thank you so much. It really means the world to us, so, and if you're eventually this will be in the regular feed many moons down the line. So if you're hearing this then, consider becoming one of our Patreon backers, because then you can get access, depending on the level that you back us at, you can get early access to this right from the get-go. And, you know, now that I bring that up, I want to mention one of the things that we, because as of right now, we've been kind of winging these, just the two of us. And we, Patrick and I enjoy that, because, you know, one of the reasons why Patrick and I got into this and why we continue to do it is we like talking to each other. We both have a lot to say, so it's not too much trouble to yap away for a half hour about the things that we like. But an idea that Patrick floated to me a few weeks ago that I think is kind of a good idea for these, just the two of us, is if we pick a book or a TV show, or probably a TV show at first. That seems to be the easiest thing to kind of get on the same page with, or a movie or something maybe, that we pick ahead of time and make sure that we both watch a whole season or watch a whole movie or read a whole book, and then talk about that one book or TV show in that episode. So if you're listening to this early on, you know, we'd love to hear your feedback about that. Maybe you can even suggest a few things that we may watch together, because we just think that would be a nice thing to do, because we end up talking about these kinds of things anyway. But if we can agree ahead of time to watch the same thing, that would be good. So
and John, just to throw it out there, I happen to, while you were talking, I went to our Patreon page, and they've changed it.
Oh yes,
it's like a whole different thing now. Wow, it's completely different. There's like a giant picture of you, and there's a giant picture of the video. It's of me, and I'm hoping that doesn't scare people off.
We should probably get in there and change things around, because
I'm looking at this giant picture of me going, oh crap, that's gonna scare people.
You know, Patreon did change, and I've been getting emails from them for the past, I don't know, for a little while now, being like, hey, this is going to be our new layout for the page. I think what they're doing with it is they're trying to feature the content that you're putting out. So they're, you know, because depending on the kind of Patreon that you're running, they realize what patrons back is the content, is the bonus content or what have you. So they're trying to make that kind of front and center a little more. That's my understanding from the few emails that we got. And I wasn't sure how it was going to look in the end, but, you know, 'cause the Patreon is in my name.
Sure. Yeah.
So because, you know, Patrick was like, you deal with the tax stuff. I don't want to deal with that. So I forget sometimes that he's not getting these same emails
It's interesting because they've changed everything. My gosh.
Well, you have the login for that. So if you need
I did log in, but it's also interesting that, like, it doesn't show our goals anymore. It just shows that, like, we've hit a goal and our next goal is $250 bucks. So, and we've also talked about, and I mean, this is a total rambling thing that we're doing right now at this point, but, we've talked about, you know, adjusting those a little bit now that we've kind of gotten into this and are seeing how people are responding to our stuff, and like maybe we had flipped some things and we should have done it in a different way. And
yeah,
so we might actually go in there and play a little bit with that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Because, you know, and even the feedback that I've received from the people that are already backing us, you know, the feeling I get, and I had the same experience when I was putting a lot of music out and doing this sort of pay what you want thing. what's awesome about people who have supported both those things is that I think they are backing the show because we put the show out for free, and it's their way of saying like, hey, I like the show. So I think the extra stuff is incentive for some folks, but I think it's more of they want to back the show as it is. So that's one of the reasons why we would like to sort of adjust those goals to, you know, give people more of what they want and not, I don't know, just make it be a little more accurate to what people may want. Cause right. I don't know if it's necessarily, you know, the best it could be just now. So and you know, hey, if you're listening to this now and you have ideas for, hey, you know what, I would totally back you if you did this or if you did this. You know, so if you have ideas for something that reasonable ideas, no like dancing on tables or anything like that.
Picking on MB.
I am, you know, stuff relevant to or not any of Patrick's crazy. Hey, you know what the next goal is John's going to come to your hometown and serenade you, and John's going to do this, and John's going to fold your laundry, and John's going to.
Hey, I can't help it, John. I just want to get you out there in front of people.
Thank you. Well, I am. So I. You know, you've told me, and I think you've sort of announced this on your social media and stuff, but I think you have some exciting news for people that are listeners of the show about your writing. Maybe you can tell our listeners a little bit about that.
Yeah, I've sold a book, so
I'm raising the roof right now.
I have sold a book to Wordfire Press, which is the press that was created by Kevin J. Anderson and Rebecca. I want to say her last name is pronounced Moesta.
Yeah, it's Moesta. Yeah.
I might be wrong on that. And yeah. I'm sure Joshua would be able to tell me, but he's not here because he's just lazy that way. So, you know, I don't know about Josh sometimes, but anyway, yeah. It's Kevin J. Anderson's press, Wordfire. They're located out of Colorado Springs, so I like that. Mm-hmm. You know, they're a Colorado Springs and a Colorado publisher. It's essentially an author co-op, so they do things a little bit differently, but it's in a way that I like, right? Because their focus is on selling books.
Mm-hmm.
So I've had some interactions with them. I've known Josh forever. Josh and I, he's one of their authors, and they have published his Maids of Wrath series.
Mm-hmm.
He and I were in a critique group many, many years ago here in Denver. We've had Kevin on mm-hmm. as part of his, was it the Clockwork Angels?
No, we had Kevin on.
What was the one that we had?
We had him on for two things. We had him on once, but it was for the, it was the
Terra.
Yes, the edge of the Terra Incognito, and it was the Edge of the World, I think was the name of it. And it was the book, which is a great book, which I really loved. Mm-hmm. And he also at the time collaborated with Neil Peart. No, not on that. On that, it wasn't with Neil Peart. It was I believe it was Prog Rock Records was the record company, mm-hmm. and it was a musician in Europe somewhere who. So basically, Kevin, they took the story and Kevin wrote, and I believe his wife too, I believe collaborated on the lyrics with him, and this musician, who I'm sort of blanking on his name, unfortunately, they made a really good progressive rock, progressive metal album based on that book. And it's really cool. I got to dig that out again, because that's such a cool album. I mean, I really loved it. And it was really quite a treat to talk to Kevin. I'm so, I don't want to say envious because I'm not an author. So it's not like I aspire to be an author, but I'm like, hey man, Patrick's like going to be having his book out. And it's like Kevin J. Anderson, who like wrote all these awesome Star Wars novel amongst many other things. And Neil Peart is like an author published of Rush. So it's like you have these Star Wars and Rush ties. Well, that's my thing, Patrick. Star Wars and Rush is my thing.
Well, and that's the thing. Kevin is a huge prog rock guy.
Oh yeah! Yeah!
I think Yes was here not too long ago, and he that was like a huge thing for him. So he was at that concert. It mm-hmm. may have been Yes or it may have been Rush. I'm not sure. But
well, he's got very strong ties with Neil Peart, and he co-wrote but
that's the Clockwork Angels stuff.
Yes. Yeah. Uh huh. Well, in fact, they go back a long way to like the early '80s because Neil Peart is always been a big science fiction reader. from the early days. And, you know, that's kind of when Rush becomes Rush. Not to give you the biography of Rush, but, you know, Neil Peart doesn't join until their second album. So he was not an original member of Rush. The Rush's first album is very early Led Zeppelin. If you hear the first Rush album, it's very Led Zeppelin, Grand Funk Railroad, you know, they're cool songs, but they would not have had the career they had if not for Neil Peart, not only for his amazing drumming, but for his lyric writing, for his intellectual, introspective, science fiction-y kind of lyrics. And so he was he reads very widely and it has a particular fondness for science fiction. And there's a song, it might even be the whole album, there's a song on Grace Under Pressure, which is one of their early 80s albums, which is based on a Kevin J. Anderson short story. So I think their association goes back till then. I think Neil was just a fan of Kevin and Kevin was a fan of Neil and they were both sort of mutual admirers of each other.
Sure.
And have had a relationship since then.
Okay. Well, yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah. And then I think Clockwork Angels is sort of the culmination of that. I think it was always like, we have to do something like this together where, you know, we sort of write the book together and we write an album about it. And like, I don't think Neil had, I mean, I don't think Kevin had anything to do with writing the lyrics, but I think I think basically Neil Peart came up with the story for Clockwork Angels, and then Kevin wrote the novel based on the story, if I have that correct.
Okay.
So, that's how that is. And I know, what's cool about Kevin in terms of prog rock is he keeps up with it, because I remember when we had him on, like he was talking about Dream Theater and he was talking about like a lot of the modern lesser known ones. And, you know, it's not like he's just stuck in the 70s or anything either. Like he's a big fan. So I know that's a big part of what he does.
Oh yeah. And when you look at just what WordFire is publishing, I mean, I'm ridiculously excited because they've got, you know, Kevin's books are published there. David Farland is published there. Jody Lynn Nye is published there. Cat Rambo is published there, Resnick. So you've got a lot of really kind of, you know, big names. And then you've got up and comers like Josh Vogt and Sam Knight. And the list just goes on and on and on and on. Mm-hmm. And on. So it's really, really exciting to be there. Mario Acevedo is also one of their authors now, who's going to be published there. And I've seen him speak. He just has this great sense of humor, and I don't know. So I'm just excited by the whole prospect. And if you've seen WordFire Press kind of come to a convention near you, they do it huge and they sell a lot of books, and they get this big booth and it's all about selling books, and they make a point of, you know, finding out who you are, what you like, what do you like to read, and then they find you the right books and they have a huge catalog. So I'm ridiculously excited. I go into edits in April.
Mm-hmm.
So if I kind of get quiet on social media and stuff, you know why, because I'm editing, and the book is my urban fantasy. So it's Samantha Cain Into the Fire. And I'm very excited to finally get that out there for people to be able to read. John has had probably 6 different versions of it now. Hasn't cracked it open once.
I did crack it open once.
Doesn't actually give a shit, but that's okay.
I do. Well, you know, now that it's
it's been sold, you might actually read it. Okay.
Yes. Yeah, so you'll have to give me
the final version,
the final copy. You know what it is, Patrick? I'll tell you, it's a horrible reason for not reading it. And I'll tell you why. It's in recent years too, I'm a little obsessive compulsive about, you know, I made it a thing that I just want to read more and more and more. And, you know, the way I keep track of it is with my Goodreads page, and I do it, and I like to put like, yes, I read that book, and now that goes in my book. So now yours will go in Goodreads, so it'll count if I read the book. So now I'm totally into reading it. I just want it to count, because otherwise if it doesn't exist on Goodreads, then it doesn't count. Mm. I don't know if you knew this, but
okay. Well, and one of the things that has made me very, very excited is they had a clause in the contract that said if I wanted to, I could go out and commission my own book cover.
Mm-hmm.
And now that's my responsibility if I want to do that. Otherwise, they will do some, you know, their art and they have a art production and all that kind of stuff. But I really, really, really want this book to stand out and not look like every other urban fantasy out there, right? I don't want some leather clad vixen with a dagger and a tattoo on the small of her back, you know, kind of book cover. So I started a friendship with someone many Worldcons ago, and I believe it was her first Worldcon. I don't think it was mine. It might have been my second. But that friendship has continued to grow and blossom. And so when I saw that was in the contract, I actually reached back out to Kevin G. Anderson. And I said, look, I would love to commission my own book cover for this. And this is the artist. And what do you think? And send a website link and everything. And he came back and said, wow, that's really impressive. Very stylistic. Yeah. You know, if you can do it, do it. Mm-hmm. We'd love to have that. And so I have actually commissioned Galen Dara to do my book cover for me. And Galen has come back and said, yes, I will do that. And, you know, we've already kind of gone back and forth. And so that makes me ridiculously excited.
I don't know. It really makes a huge difference.
It does.
And I don't know why it shouldn't make a difference. It really shouldn't.
But it does.
But it's interesting because even with, just talking about how I, you know, in the past few years, I just try to read as much as possible. I think it's the value of that is I get so much value out of that. And one of the ways that I've been able to read more is to read in every format. So print books, hardcovers, paperbacks, ebooks, audiobooks. I just kind of feel like if you have a book with you all the time and can listen to it or read it on your device, you're just going to read more. And it's one of the things with ebooks, even with an ebooks on my Kindle, for instance, you know, so I use NetGalley and, you know, NetGalley is kind of interesting. And I think the publishers are sort of interesting with ebooks because for a while there, I feel like all the science fiction folks, big publishers were putting all their stuff up on NetGalley. And if you were a person like us or a reviewer and you had your NetGalley thing and you got pre-approved, like you can get a lot of the books.
You could, but what annoyed me, so NetGalley, I have stepped away from NetGalley and it would take a huge amount of convincing to get me to go back to NetGalley because number one, a lot of the books were offered as PDF. And if you put a PDF on a Kindle, you know, it's just like, fuck you. It's not going to work. It's crap. And they did that supposedly for digital rights management. And they were afraid that people were going to steal the books and pirate the books. And I totally get that fear. I do. I understand it. However, if you're going to make it impossible for someone to actually electronically read your book on a Kindle, then you need to find another way. You need to do something else. And so for me, NetGalley was a joke. It was an absolute total joke. And it also didn't work very well. I had a lot of problems with it. And so I finally just stepped away and I said, look, if you want me to read your book, you have to send me an EPUB. You have to send me a Mobi. And for the most part, publishers said, no, we're sending you a PDF. And I said, then take me off your list.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I've noticed. I feel like there was a run there where most of the big science fiction places had their stuff up.
And John, it wasn't just me. I mean, when we were doing book reviews on functionalnerds.com and I had book reviewers and I was setting all that up through NetGalley, my book reviewers, when they found out it was NetGalley, walked away. They wanted nothing to do with it because NetGalley was such a pain in the ass.
It was in the beginning and then it got a lot better and I really liked it for a long time. And I don't know, and I think it's a much better service now. However, and I suspect this is more from the publishers than from them, I've just noticed that there's not as much of the major stuff up there as there was at one point.
Especially the New York publishers, they're very afraid of electronic.
Yeah, no, it's and easier, I've known that.
And again, I understand that. It's easier to pirate an electronic book in a lot of respects. And that's what they're afraid of. And I get that. But at the same time, they're handcuffing us.
Yeah. I just, you know, my experience with it has just been, I think for maybe a year or two there, it was really nice. And it was really like most of the publishers had their stuff up as a Mobi or an EPUB. It had a lot of their stuff. And it was very good. And there's still a lot of good stuff up there. However, I noticed some of the publishers aren't putting much up anymore. Or I noticed some are doing, they're calling it a preview excerpt where they just have like the first two chapters or something. And that's fine. That's their prerogative. Look, I say it all the time. I consider myself very fortunate to get both as print copies and ebooks. Like I'm happy to get, it's one of it's the big perk of doing the show is that we have access to all these books. So I understand all of those reasons, but I've read less ebooks that way recently because there just hasn't been as many. And I've noticed because I'll usually go in and I'm pre-approved from a lot of the big science fiction folks. And I just go through my pre-approved list to see what's out. And I just notice there's not as much out. As you said, places that used to put publishers that used to put Mobis and EPUBs up are only doing the protected PDFs. And I look at that and I'm just like, yeah, no, I'm not. That's a waste of time. I'm not even going
to. And it comes down to the PDF is what we would call a static form.
Okay.
So in other words, it's not going to flow.
No,
it's not HTML or XML, which is what an ebook really is. Ebooks are essentially code; they're XML, mm-hmm. and they flow on whatever your reader is.
Yes,
and that's how you can change the font size and all that kind of stuff, and you page through the book, and it's essentially reformatting and reflowing everything every time you read the page.
Right.
But with a PDF, it's a static. So if you want to zoom in, if you want to make the font bigger, or if you want to make the font smaller, now you've broken the format. It won't flow on your reader.
Yeah. No.
That's a problem.
Yeah, especially for the whole reason I use a Kindle is I read my Kindle on an elliptical every morning when mm-hmm. I'm at the gym because it fits right on the elliptical. Sure. And I can put the print really big and I get to go boop, yep. boop. And I get, like a half hour of reading on the Kindle done every day. I can't do that with a PDF. No, I can't be scanning.
You're having to scroll left and right and up
yeah,
and down
I can't
to see the whole page. Yeah.
So, I mean, even if I wasn't, I mean, I've read a couple things, not full books. I've read some short stories that way. And I'm just like, oh, no, I'm not doing that anymore. but my point, the reason I even brought it up, because you brought up artwork, is some of them don't, but almost – all like if you buy an ebook on Amazon, it will show up with its nice cover, right. Even though it's like on a black and white Kindle and it's small. I still like seeing the cover.
Yeah.
When you have the e-arcs, they usually don't. Sometimes they do,
right.
But they usually don't. They just have like the title of the book and the author, and it's the same book, and I get it, but it's like. It's a different experience. Like I want that cover on there, you know, and I have to look into doing this. I have a Kindle Paperwhite. When I bought this about a year or so ago, Amazon, you have two choices when you buy it. You can get it for if you could pay more and not have ads on it.
Correct.
And of course I cheaped out and just had them have the ad because the ads aren't interruptive. It's just when you're in your home screen, it has an ad for
correct.
A book.
Yeah. And I did the same thing for Mom. That's the one I got her.
Yeah. And it's when you're reading, it's totally fine. It's like I said, there's no interruptions or anything like that. So if you need to keep your costs low, it's really not a big deal, but I do find it annoying because I don't know what this would look like if I actually went and removed the ads. And I actually looked into it. And I think it's even more like you can have your settings on your Kindle. And if you pay $20, you can have those removed. I don't know what comes up on the home screen. My hope would be on the home screen, it would be the cover of the book that you're reading. Then.
It's actually, they scroll through. There's like five or six different Kindle specific things that they put on there.
If you don't have the ad.
Yeah. So if I had my Kindle here with me, I could show you. But like it'll be – they're very cool designs, but it's all about Kindle.
Okay.
You know, what Kindle means or where Kindle came from. And so like they'll there's like a Shakespeare one. There's just mm-hmm. different ones. They're all very – it's like ads for the Kindle itself. It's
not then that's totally not worth it because what I would want is like the nice cover of the actual book that I'm reading. I think that would be cool.
Yeah, it doesn't do that.
Yeah.
At least mine doesn't.
Yeah, I don't know. But it makes a difference, and it's one of the reasons why I still love getting the print books, because there is part of me, like, I live in a small apartment and I have so many books and I just, as soon as I'm done reading them, I just go immediately and donate them to the library now. And just cause I don't have the room and unfortunately I actually even keep a lot of them in a closet at my job, cause I'm just like, well, I don't want to get rid of them, but I don't have the space at home. But I love the covers, man. Like I love getting the books and seeing the covers, and I love being like, ooh, this one looks good. Maybe I'll read this one next. I love it. I don't know.
So there's a couple of things I brought up the artwork for if I had published traditionally, mm-hmm. I would not have any say whatsoever in my cover. Mm-hmm. So I'm ridiculously excited that was an option going with WordFire, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. and essentially what they're trying to do is they're trying to make it so you can be as successful as possible. They're going to support me and sell my books at conventions and sell my books on their website. And I can sell my book on my website and stuff like that. It's not a vanity press. I don't pay them any money. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not like that at all. I'm investing in the book by going out and commissioning art that, you know, is not coming through them. So that's my decision to make. I didn't have to make that decision. I could have gone with their stuff if I wanted to, but I just decided I wanted to have as big an impact as possible. So that's something that I would not be able to do with a traditional Big Five kind of publisher. And believe me, I've gone that route and tried to get this particular book published through there. A lot of the feedback that I got is essentially they're not interested in launching a urban fantasy from a debut author at this time. Mm-hmm. Okay, whatever.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm just going to do it through Woodfire, and I'm ridiculously excited about that. When you talk about the books that we do get, I don't get anywhere near as many as I used to, and I'm actually happy about that, because mm-hmm. we don't have the the book reviewers anymore, you know, doing stuff for mm-hmm. nerds.com. We've talked about trying to get that going again, but the books that I do have, that I do get, are wonderful, and I think they're gorgeous, and I use them to get people on SF Signal and different things. Sometimes I'll say to you, you know, hey John, look at this I just got, you know, maybe we should get this person on, and you're like, yeah, I got that 2 weeks ago, Patrick.
I'm so smug about it too. Yeah. Excuse me,
but I do, like you do. I donate the books after a little while to various places, and I've done it with Mile High Con. I've done it with Pike's Peak Writers. You know, I'll mm-hmm. donate a basket of books that they can auction off, and like with Mile High Con, it goes to the children's literacy program, and with Pike's Peak Writers, it goes into the 501c3, and you know, they help writers and different people and stuff like that. So it's not like these books go to waste. The problem that I have are the ARCs.
Yeah, I don't know what to do with those, because
the only thing that I know of that you can do is recycle them.
Yeah, because I don't get as many of those as I used to, but I still get a decent amount of them.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing. I mean, it's really funny because, again, it's the same book. Yes, I know they're uncorrected, but chances are they're going to be pretty much the same thing by the end.
I like that sometimes you'll get the one, it's just a blank green or white cover uh-huh. that says, you know, the title of the book by such and such advanced reading copy or something like that, or uncorrected proof.
Yeah.
And you can't give those to libraries. You can't give them, you can't donate them. You can't sell them. There's nothing you can do except recycle them, as far as I know.
Yeah. And there it's a kind of a bummer with those, because it's so funny. It goes back to our artwork thing, because they usually don't have artwork on those. Sometimes right. they do. Sometimes they have like an early version of the art. But most of the time they don't. And I'm less inclined to read those because I want the artwork on it. It's so sure. silly, but I mean, a lot of times I get the ARC and then I get the finished copy yep, too. Yep. But yeah, I don't know, because I also don't want to, you know, I'm even a little, I mean, most of the people I know are pretty trustworthy, but I'm even a little hesitant to give those to people.
Oh yeah.
Cause I'm like, this has like the publicist information on it. It's got like emails and phone numbers. Yeah. And like, that's not what you want out to people. Like, we're trusted in that way. And, I appreciate that we are trusted, and I don't want to break that trust.
Right. By yeah. Life. And it's interesting because DiNardo and I have gone through the dealer's room at WorldCon before and seen those on tables being sold.
Oh, yeah.
And that made us a little bit uncomfortable because, you know, he gets a ton of books, ton of books.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, you're not supposed to sell those. And I'm like, yeah.
No.
You're not. That's
no, it makes me really happy these days to donate because where I used to live, they didn't really accept books very often. Like it was like two times a year. And you know, where my current library is the county library. So it's a really big library. So they just have like a donation table out all the time. And it's, I feel really good because these are new books that are, and I usually read them first before. I mean, there's sometimes I get ones where I'm like, cause for the most part, I get relevant books sent to me. But sometimes I get stuff because it's a good problem to have. But what I've noticed is when you get on a couple of these lists, you tend to get on more lists. Yeah. So I get stuff from, you know, it's the same company, but it's like a different, sort of subgenre that they focus in or something. So I get some stuff sometimes that it's like, I know I'm not going to read that. I know we're not going to get that on the show.
Yeah, and the stuff that I would, and I understand completely what you're saying, because I got on some lists there for a while where I was getting a lot of stuff that I would never read.
Mm-hmm.
And it always made me sad because the stuff that I would read, I never get. Like no one ever sends me a Jim Butcher book. Mm-hmm. And you know, no one sends me a James S. A. Corey book. No one sends me a Daniel Abraham book. You know, mm-hmm. so like the stuff that I would read, I typically don't get. And I also, I understand that because they're trying to get other people, you know, they want us to pay attention to the other people. And yes, we need to do that. And a lot of times I'll use those and try to get in touch with those people to get them on SF Signal and do some interviews with them. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't, you know?
Yeah, so with those ones that I know I'm not going to read, I just go and donate them immediately to the library. So I know like the library must be psyched because they're getting these like basically pristine new books.
The only thing, John, though, is, and I've had to come to terms with this, at least here locally, the library tells me that 9 times out of 10, they are not going to put that book on the shelf. They're going to sell it and buy something else.
Yeah, I'm sure that happens with some of the ones I do too. But I have to say, with my county library, that's what makes me especially excited because I go over to the new releases all the time anyway, and I'm like, that was my book, that was my book. So they actually keep most of mine, I would say, because I see them on the shelf, and that makes me happy because I don't know what the the strategy is behind this, but you know. I appreciate getting these books, and I know we get them because we are part of the ecosystem that helps promote and publicize these books, and I get that, and so that's great. But it makes me feel really good to kind of go that extra layer, that extra step where it's like, well, now these are at the library, and so especially if it's a new author, it's like someone may take this book out and now become a fan of this author, and someone may, you know, so that makes me happy because I feel like that's a part of this whole process too of the libraries are really important. And I think if you talk to most authors, they know it's because, you know, what the library chooses to buy has a pretty big impact on their career. Oh, yeah. And it helps to build, besides that, it just overall helps to build their audience. Cause you know, with genre, you know, most genre books are series, you know, that's been my observation is most of them are series. So look, if your first book is in the library, someone picks it up, guess what? They're probably going to buy your second or third books. That's how it works. But so
you would hope. One of my pet peeves is when someone says, look, I support authors. You know, I check their books out of the library all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Well, checking the book out of the library doesn't necessarily help the author. You know,
it occasionally helps.
Buy a book in that way and write a review online. So
it helps. I mean, there's layers of it. I mean, it helps in that the more checkouts they get, then the more the libraries are likely to buy the next books.
Yeah, they might buy a couple
books. So it helps, but you know, it's not as much as just buying the book, you know.
Yeah.
And I do that all the time with you know, so I have Brian, you know, you had mentioned like my smug, like I got that 2 weeks ago. I have the final book in Brian Staveley's trilogy. Mm-hmm. And I love those are like my favorite fantasies of the past few years. And I have that one, and it's a big damn book. I mean, I think it's near 1,000 pages. And I was looking at it the other day because I probably will read that pretty soon. And not only is it big page wise, it's like it's a physically large book with long page, and the print is kind of small. So I don't know what the word count is on that, but it's a lot. And what I will probably do, even though the book was sent to me, is like I will probably also buy the ebook.
Yeah.
And because it's just, well, if I just read the print book, that's going to take me like 6 weeks to read, because I might not even want to bring that book with me to school because it's such a big book. I'll probably just read that at home when I eat breakfast or something. So if I buy the ebook, then I can read it while I'm at the gym, and I can, so, you know, it helps there too. I do that. And I did that with his last book. I bought the ebook and the audiobook because I was just, I want to see if I can blow through this book. So I was reading the print book, the ebook, and the audiobook all at the same time. And I got through that book in like 2 weeks. And that was like, you know, near 1,000-page book with small print. And it was cool to do it that way, but it's not. Anyway, if you send us these books, we're probably going to buy them half the time anyway.
So. Well, you do. Absolutely.
I do. Yeah.
You know, I tend to go and get the audiobook at this point.
Yeah.
And just because I'm it's become easier for me to consume them over audio.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of times you've talked about you get a book in the mail and it's like, here's this new book from someone. And then you go out and immediately buy the ebook. I go out and immediately check to see if I have a credit and can I get the audio.
Right.
You know, because that's just what I'm like. And I've retired my phone. Mm. My iPhone 4 has been retired now.
Okay.
And I actually now have the iPhone 6S Plus.
Ooh, look at that.
I've also retired the TARDIS back cover. And for at least a little while, I am going to rock the Batman 75th anniversary.
Nice.
So, but I've got my Audible on here so that I can I can continue to listen to audiobooks. And as part of my work with Pikes Peak Writers, as being a board member down there, and I've been going to a few more events down in Colorado Springs. That's at least an hour drive for me, depends on where I'm leaving from. And so that's time when I can, you know, plug in and listen to an audiobook. So that's how I kind of kill that commute time back and forth from there. And to get back to the word fire and the book deal, you're probably going to see me at more conventions just because that's kind of their model, right? It's come out to the conventions, do more panels and work the booth and sell some books. So you will probably see me hanging out with Quincy J. Allen with the he's giant. He's taller than I am.
Mm.
So yeah, John, think about that. He's taller than I am.
Yeah,
and a huge personality, Mohawk. Really nice guy, and he tends to be the one who kind of drives around and takes the booth. And more than likely, as soon as, you know, things kind of ramp up, I will do some of those events with him and with whoever else is out there doing stuff, you know, once the book is out. And so you'll see me at a little bit more cons around.
Cool. Well, if you have plans to come to any of the ones within reasonable driving distance of where I am.
No, absolutely not. No, never.
You're not coming to the East Coast.
Damn it, no.
Well, if you do, we should try to plan, because maybe we can try to do some functional nerd stuff there too.
We should.
You know, we could do a double whammy where you can, you know, push your books and we can do some podcasting and all that good stuff.
Wouldn't that be cool?
So, yeah. Well, for keeping it short, we always go long. When it's just the two of us, it's just like blip, 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 blip. And I love doing the just the two of us ones.
Before you even cut it out, we haven't even talked about the idea.
Oh, yeah. No, didn't you
kind of mentioned it, but you didn't really, I mean.
Oh, yeah. About the picking the same thing. Oh, yeah. So what Patrick had the idea, and which I think we want to do, and you can give us some ideas for it. I think one of the things we could do for the just the two of us is to pick a book or a TV show or a movie that we both agree to watch or read, and in the month leading up to the just the two of us, and then have that episode be dedicated to talking about it. Mm-hmm. So what we'll probably do, I imagine, because Patrick's already watching it and I know I'm going to watch it, is we'll probably do Daredevil season 2. That's what I'm guessing, because I know that'll be the same thing that we both watch. So, but if you have ideas, let us know. And what we'd like to do is you know, kind of talk about it on social media and talking about it on maybe the episodes leading up, so that that way you guys can listen or watch or read whatever we are. And, you know, maybe we can even get some feedback in on that leading up till when we actually record it, and you can give us some of your insights into whatever that
and it
is.
Gives and us, it gives us a little direction for the, that episode.
You know, just like the, you know, because you got to start playing Ramblin' Man on the beginning of this. You know, you
which should, one? You like Ramblin' Man or like Ramble On?
Both. I say open with Ramblin' Man and then close with Ramble On. Okay. I think that is the way to do it. I really do. I think that's how you got to do it. You ever heard Train do Train did a version of Ramble On?
Oh yeah, yeah.
And they I, do I a really good like version.
The, yeah,
I do too. He's a great singer. I don't like him as a lyricist, but as a singer, I love him.
He's an amazing singer. He does have a really good range of voice.
Oh yeah. Yeah,
and that's almost like the entire reason why I listen to Train is just to hear, you know, what is he going to do this time?
You know what they, I will tell you, I think the best song they have is it was a single. They had a song on the, it was either the first or the second Sam Raimi Spider-Man movies.
Okay.
They had a song called Ordinary, and it's awesome. If you're not familiar with that song, go and check it out. Because if you like Pat Monahan is his name. Mm-hmm. If you like his voice, go and I believe the name of the song is Ordinary, and it's on one of the Spider-Man soundtracks. I want to say it's the second one, but it could be the first one.
Okay.
It's awesome because it's heavy. It was before like they decided that like we're a pop band and we're going to do poppy songs, and they're fine. I like their I mean, I always
hey,
like
so sister.
I always give them crap about
is
their lyrics.
That Mr. the radio.
Yeah, before they did this. This is like super heavy and just that dude just wailing over this. Like, and it's like it's a real kind of like, you know, speaking of Zeppelin, it does have that kind of heavy kind of plodding. And it's like, to me, it just it fit like a superhero movie. Great. I love that tune. It's a great tune. So if you're not familiar with that song, put it on a playlist. You will dig it. So.
One of my favorites from them is it's a very ballady kind of thing. And it's, oh my gosh, what was the name of that song?
Is it Early?
I don't know if it's Early or not, but it's, Don't Give Up On Me. I'm About to Come Alive. I remember is the lyric. And he just hits these really high notes where, you know, it's but it's essentially the story of the song is that he can hear her downstairs on the phone telling someone that you know, things just aren't working out, and he's like, don't give up on me. I'm about to come alive. And, you know, don't let the pictures on the wall with all the people staring back at us, don't let them be right about us getting married and this and that. It's just, it's a really good song. But it uses his vocal range really well because, you know, he's kind of like singing at a normal pace. And then suddenly he just explodes into, don't give up on me. I'm about to come alive. And he's just really, really high. And it's good.
I'm going to have to make a Train playlist of like the good songs because I've gotten so soured on them because I feel like some of their lyrics are so silly that it really takes me out of the song. But you're right. Now that we're talking about it, I'm like, oh, Meet Virginia. That was a good song.
Meet Virginia. And
there's some really, I actually saw them when that very first album was out. Believe it or not, they were opening for Collective Soul, who I really like Collective Soul a lot, but it's sort of funny because Train became a much bigger band than Collective Soul. But it was really cool because there was at this outdoor place by where I live. And so I was familiar with Train there. Their first album was out and they did Ramble On live. So I was like, well, that's pretty damn impressive.
Yeah.
And then it was really cool because then Collective Soul did their set and I was really into them. And they actually covered Crazy Train by Ozzy Osbourne. So there's a really cool, it was a really good show.
It's one of those things, John, where bands will do things live that they don't necessarily record at any time. And so I had also seen Train do Ramble On, but I couldn't find it as a track anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And they did a live show that was recorded for PBS or something. And so now you can find their version of Ramble On YouTube.
Yeah, they have. They recorded it. It was like a B-side, I think, of something because I think one of my friends had like a CD single that was like the B side of. So they actually went in the studio and recorded it. So I don't know if it's on an album or if you could find it on iTunes at this point or something, but a version of that, a non-live version of that does exist.
Since we're talking about music for a second, I just want to throw it out there that once again, I am really into Trucks Tedeschi Band, mm-hmm. or Tedeschi Trucks Band, however they do it, and their new stuff. Just so good.
Yeah.
Good. I love them. I love that band. And I love, it's like, it's almost like a rhythm and blues band at this point, right?
Yeah.
And they kind of do, and when you look at rhythm and blues, a lot of that is inspired by gospel music from the South, mm-hmm. and stuff. And so it's very, very bluesy, very rhythmy. I know that's just repeating what I already said.
No.
I think you understand what I'm saying. There's like lots of harmony. There's horns, I think, in this one. And it's just, it's a wonderful, wonderful album. Loving it.
A rabbit hole that I think you would enjoy falling into if you haven't already. And I don't know if I've ever told you about it. When I was getting into playing lap steel, and I still play lap steel, and I really like playing lap steel. And if you don't know, Patrick often brings up Tedeschi Trucks, and Derek Trucks is the guitar player. And he plays slide much like Dwayne Allman did, although I would say he's gone way past that. Not to diss Dwayne Allman, right. but he
started with the Allman Brothers Band.
Yes, yeah, he's the
fingerpicks like Clapton, yeah. Which is a trip. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because Derek Trucks is the nephew of Butch Trucks, who is the drummer in the Allman Brothers. So there is a family connection, mm-hmm. there. But when I was getting into it, there was also a guy that came out at the same time who played pedal steel, named Robert Randolph, who I'm sure you're familiar with, Patrick. Mm-hmm. So his records are certainly worth checking out. But the tradition that he comes from is this thing called sacred steel. And it was this underground thing that was just in like Baptist churches. It was all just like church music. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of a very odd thing because it was obviously gospel music. But in the South, they sort of used it, and I don't even know how musically they got from one thing to the other, but because in your typical church, you have like an organ, right. But they didn't have these big pipe organs in these churches in the South. So they started using pedal steels, which is that instrument that you see in country music, but they did not play it like it was played in country music. Cause in country music, when you hear that pedal steel, it's that really kind of like weepy sound. And it sounds beautiful, whether you like country music or not, a pedal steel sounds great. But these players like ran it through distorted amps, and like, so it has that really kind of Dwayne Allman kind of throaty slide sound, but you hear these band, and they have like bass and drums and everything else singing these kind of gospel songs and these kind of like hollering sort of gospel tunes, but then you hear like this like crazy, it's on a pedestal with this crazy like slide guitar and stuff. You could find, I remember years and years ago I got a CD, and I think it was just called Sacred Steel, and it was a couple of the big figures, because these players were never recorded. They played in their church. Mm-hmm. That's what they did.
Yeah.
It was a total just church thing. Albums were never made. And eventually they did. Someone went and be like, you know, the public should hear this too. So if you Google Sacred Steel, you could probably find some stuff. And I because you like rhythm and blues, and because you like that kind of slide guitar stuff, mm-hmm. I bet you will dig some of that stuff.
So I probably would. Yeah. And the last thing I just wanted to mention is something funny. So I've been a man on a mission. I've been kind of rearranging my basement and my recording space and all this kind of stuff, and painting and doing all this just decluttering everything like I do occasionally, but not on this scale before. I mean, I'm really kind of going through my basement and just cleaning everything up. And that's one of the reasons why we didn't live stream today's recordings and stuff, is because I'm not set up for it right now. And I did set up the iMac, and I'm worried about the iMac because it's so old and it's what we used to record on, but it's also got a lot of our little tricks and stuff on there. And as you pointed out a few weeks ago, or maybe a month ago or more, when you upgrade to El Capitan, you lose access to a lot of stuff. This computer cannot upgrade to El Capitan. It's too old. It will not run El Capitan. So it's gone as far as it can go. So I just need to keep it going. But I was really worried about shutting it down in order to move the desk and stuff. And so as soon as I shut it down, I moved it to another plug, plugged it in, and turned it back on, because I didn't want it to stay at rest too long. And because sometimes with these Macs, because you don't really reboot them very often, you don't shut them down very often, if you leave them running for years at a time, which is what this one has done, you can sometimes, when it gets cold after being shut down, the hard drive can freeze up, and then you're screwed. So I just made a point of moving it, turning it on. Well, then I had to move it and turn it on again. So I did it a third time. But I set up my iTunes, and when I was down here painting, I would have the iTunes going, listening to random music. And then I would stop iTunes and go to work, you know, the next day. My brother would come downstairs, and he would just turn on a radio, because that's his level of technology, radio. And he would be painting and doing stuff, you know, when I was at work. He called me in a panic because he dropped something on the keyboard, which woke the computer up and started iTunes.
Oh, that's
fun. And he couldn't figure out what the hell he'd done. He couldn't figure out how to stop it. And he was just in a panic. He's like, I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do. How do I stop this? I'm like, hit the space bar. Which one's the space bar? The big white one, the biggest white key on there. I said, just tap it once. And he tapped it and the music stopped. He's like, that's all I had to do? I'm like, yeah. He's like, I hate computers. And it was hilarious.
Demon box.
I imagine him sitting there, you know, grabbing the mouse, going, computer, shut up. Stop. Stop now. Stop. Yeah, he and I, completely different people. Not a computer guy at all. He gets mad if the TV isn't working right, you know. So that was kind of funny.
Cool.
That was my funny moment.
I see. Demon box. all right. Well, let's wrap it up there, because I feel like you and I could just keep going. So
I have a whole story about demon bone. So I could.
Just to let everyone know, when we started this project, let's keep it short. We'll keep it under a half hour. So 50 something minutes later. There you go.
Didn't work.
Yeah, that's okay. That's fine by me. I'm happy to keep yapping. But all right, everybody. Well, again, if you're a Patreon backer, thanks so much. If you're hearing this in the regular stream, hey, if you want early access to this, consider, you know, backing us on Patreon at one of the, I forget which level this is at, and we may even change it. So, you know, just go over to our Patreon, and which is patreon.com/functionalnerds, and consider backing us. It means the world to us, and we're appreciative of everybody that does it so far and everyone who will do it in the future. So thanks very much, everybody. Hope you've been enjoying the episodes. I think we've been having like a nice run of some cool new guests that we haven't had on before, and really smart, fun, interesting people. And we hope to just keep bringing that to you. All right, everybody. Have a great week. We'll see you next time.
Thank you on behalf of the group and ourselves. I hope we pass the audition.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Would you like a chili, baby?